This is a year-end edition of Our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine, happy to have you with us on this Monday, December 30th. As 2013 winds down and we get ready to welcome in 2014, our state government reporter Sean Johnson joins us to take a look back at many of the top stories in state politics in this past year. And we will also preview the priorities in the year to come. And we will wonder, what do you think was among the most significant Wisconsin news stories of the year? What is your hope for state politics in 2014? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on our Facebook page, The Joy Cardine Show, or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Sean Johnson is Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter. With us for the entire hour for this last state capitol report of the year. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
You know, we will start with our look back, and I wanted to add that I posted this on our Facebook page and asked listeners, what was the most important news story of the year? And one of our listeners, a supporter of Governor Walker, said, Governor Walker's successful win in the recall. And I had to remind that listener, that wasn't this year. That was 2012, wasn't it?
Yeah, actually, if you look back at our last couple year-enders, they were just sort of these monumental news stories that probably will stick with you for a while and maybe seem like they were just yesterday.
Right, exactly. Yeah, but even though without the recall election, I did see an Associated Press report that said that Governor Walker and he pretty much dominated state politics. Would you agree with that?
Well, I mean, he has control of Republicans have control of state the government, and he's making the calls, and he's probably a more powerful executive than, you know, than our last governor in that regard, just because you know, the legislature will follow his lead on most things. And so, yeah, he's dominated the news and he's become a national figure, and so state government decisions tend to revolve around him.
Well, we will kind of go through the year, maybe in not necessarily in order of significance, but I think that you went through the archives and kind of did sort of a month-to-month type of a rundown here.
We'll call it the order that I remembered them in.
Okay, that's
this
good.
Not, this is not a countdown, but sort of in the order that they happened.
And one of the things that happened is that we had a bill that became law that allowed the proposed iron ore mine in northern Wisconsin to proceed. Tell us about that.
Way back in February and March of this year, the state legislature did pass a mining bill, and this is another one that and you might think, didn't that happen a while ago?
Yeah.
Because it was one from the last session that was brought up, talked about extensively, and didn't pass. This time around, Republicans gained a seat in the state Senate. So
that's
instead
right.
of having a 17-16 majority, they had an 18 seat majority. And so it was just a different dynamic. And so they knew that they were going to have a chance to draw up a mining bill. The author was Senator Tom Tiffany, who had previously been the assembly author of this bill. He went on to win a state Senate seat. And Tom Tiffany, you know, basically shaped this, you know, with strong influence from the governor's office, strong influence from the industry. But he took the lead on this bill. Here's his speech on the Senate floor.
This is the first step in the rebirth of the mining industry. And I want my colleagues to know, those of you that choose to vote for this bill tonight, you can go forth with every confidence that the regulatory agencies, both state and federal, they're going to do a thorough review of a mining permit and make sure that a mining applicant does their work in an environmentally safe manner.
So that process is happening right now, and more on the federal regulators in just a minute here. You did have this year, again, one of the key opponents of this bill was Senator Dale Schultz. Schultz, a Republican from Richland Center, was able to block this bill last session by siding with Democrats to vote against it. And this session, he was also a very strong, outspoken opponent of the bill. And he said that this was essentially putting local residents in northern Wisconsin in a very tough place.
They believe they're being asked to sacrifice their pristine environment, which they know is a sure thing, for the promise of a fictional picture of a prosperous future with a mining economy.
And Schultz would talk at length off and on this bill about, you know, sort of the illusion of a mining economy, that it's a boom and bust economy, has been throughout history, and nothing suggests that this would be different. He couldn't provide that crucial vote this year because of the numbers in the Senate. And so all focus really turned to Senator Bob Coles of Green Bay. Bob Coles, somebody that environmental groups have often been very supportive of for what he's done on water issues. And on this, he did have a chance to sit down with Senator Tiffany and craft some changes to the bill. And, you know, in the end, that was enough to get his support. And here's a little snip of his speech on the Senate floor.
So I thank the senator from the 17th for having the guts and the fortitude of holding things up. It still may not be good enough for him, and he'll articulate that. But I believe this bill is good enough for me at this point. I've got fingerprints on it.
Senator from the 17th being Dale Schultz, mm-hmm. He held it up, gave Bob Coles a chance to put his influence on it, and he voted yes, and it passed the Senate. Passing the Assembly was basically a foregone conclusion. The governor signed it, and really this has been the paramount Republican jobs bill from this year. And so now, certainly people will be asking, what's happening up there if this is the jobs bill? And just by the nature of the permit process, it's not going to happen quickly.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the very latest developments there. But once the mine, at least the process was okayed, and in a way, this bill did was change some of the regulations for a mine. It softened Wisconsin's very, very, very tough mining legislation or laws that were on the books.
Yeah, I mean, I think broadly speaking, it sped up the permitting process for a mine, and there's only so much you can do there. But it also, in effect, said there are times when it's okay to fill wetlands. The legislature, it's a big bill, it's a big complicated bill, yeah. But there's actually a statement in there from the legislature saying that, you know, we believe it's in the interest of the state of Wisconsin to conduct mining, and that there are times when, when filling wetlands is just necessary. That sort of sums up the bill in a nutshell, because there's a lot of water up there in the Pinoki Hills, and there are going to be instances where you have a lot of waste when you're digging a mine. It's got to go somewhere. And so that makes it easier to find places to put that waste.
Well, anyway, the GTAC, the mining company, was proceeding with various tests, and there were protesters that greeted them at times.
Yeah, and we'll play you a little clip of the audio of that protest that does not include the F-bomb, I think.
Do not take my family!
Get out of our home!
Get out of our home!
So this group of more than a dozen people with their faces covered came into this mining test drill camp where mining workers were taking test samples, and proceeded to shout at the workers, told them to get out of there in no uncertain terms. One of the people there took one of the workers' cameras, wrestled it away from her. She's being prosecuted or was prosecuted up in Iron County. And so, quite a video, and this is something that Republicans played up throughout the summer. And later on, when they went to pass a law that restricted some public access to the mining site. So in what would normally be kind of a slow news cycle over the summer, you had this happening, the mining story that you thought you were maybe done looking at for a little while, this pops up, and then it comes up that the mining company is hiring basically paramilitary-style security officers from Arizona. They're out in the woods with camouflage and semi-automatic weapons to patrol the mining site. And not only are they out in the woods, they are unlicensed by the state, which is against law. And so Senator Bob Jauch, an outspoken critic of the mine, really seized on that story this summer.
I think it shows that GTAC has no respect for the public by putting people in the woods who frighten citizens, and they have no regard for the law.
And this is something where if you read the letter of the law on state regulations, the state really could have thrown the book at the security firm and even the mining company for having them out there. But they basically let them get off without punishment and really without explanation.
Yeah. We need to take a break pretty soon. Right now, though, the Army Corps of Engineers last week talked about this mine and the environmental impact statement that's needed?
Yeah, and the environmental impact statement is just one of those things that's crucial for getting a mining project approved. In the past, the state and the federal government might have worked together on an environmental impact statement and gone on the same timeline, but because state law now diverges from federal regulations so much, the federal government has said that we need to do our own. And so talk of speeding up the timelines at the state level, you know, it looks like it's just not going to happen, or it's not going to permit a mine any faster because federal government says we got to do this and we can't do it on your schedule.
Just because I need to yeah. clarify this. So even though the state law now speeds up the state permitting process,
yeah.
the Army Corps of Engineers is saying we're going to take our time on this.
Yeah, you got to get federal and state approval. And you know, in the past, those governments might have worked together and say, okay, we'll do this at the same time. Federal government's now saying your law is so much different than ours that we have to do this part of it on our own.
Do we know, Sean, how long the Army Corps of Engineers would typically take for something like this?
Oh, I remember when they testified on this at committee, it was a few years longer than the state was hoping.
Yeah. So that mine and whatever jobs would come with it, if it indeed gets a final approval, is many years down the road.
It could be.
We are talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about the biggest state stories, biggest stories in state politics from 2013. What do you think were among the most significant Wisconsin news stories of the year? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to a year-end edition of our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson, taking a look back at the year that was at the State Capitol, and we will, in our next half hour, talk a little bit more about the year to come. And we welcome your questions for Sean. We welcome the story you think was the most significant in 2013. Maybe what is your hope for state politics in 2014? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, Sean, we just made it through the beginning of 2013 and, well, the mining process being approved and the protests at the mining site. Didn't we also have a budget proposal from the governor in February?
Yeah, and this budget proposal really for, you know, as relatively little attention as it got, you know, compared to his first session. This budget did a lot, and you really didn't see it ignite the protests anywhere near you did in Governor Walker's first budget or the budget repair bill. But when you go down the list of what this did, this budget, in mm-hmm. terms of policy, there's just a lot there. And I think one of the big things is going to be the statewide expansion of vouchers for the first time. And here's Governor Walker in February when he first announced his initial plan to expand vouchers in Wisconsin.
Now, while we work to improve underperforming schools, our children can't afford to wait. This is why we provide new choices for parents in areas where schools are failing to meet expectations.
And so at the time, the governor wanted to expand vouchers, kind of a robust expansion of vouchers into, I think it was 9 school districts. They had a couple of schools that were getting what they were saying was a DRF on the state report cards, brand new state report cards. And that was basically rejected by moderate Republicans in the state Senate, Democrats as well. But when it comes to decision makers, people like Luther Olson, Mike Ellis, other Republicans in the Senate did not like that. And so that really didn't go anywhere. What did happen, though, you had a much smaller expansion of vouchers by the numbers, but state law was changed. So now we do have the voucher school system statewide in Wisconsin. And, you know, this was something that, you know, people like Luther Olson or Ellis really had to sit at the table for a while with the governor to get. But it was something that left Democrats like John Richards, who spoke here in June, sort of scratching their heads.
The polls on school choice is worse than what we had before, no question. And anybody who thinks this is going to stay at 1% of the school population is living in a fantasy land. This is how they started the school choice program in Milwaukee. It's now the largest program by far in the United States. And over time, if we start this program around the state, it will grow to be the largest school choice program in the country eventually.
So, and I mean, John Richards is not like living in a fantasy world there. This is, the governor said as much right away that we didn't really think we were going to get too much more enrollment than this out of the gate anyway. And, you know, we'll go back next budget if we need to, and we'll lift this cap, this enrollment cap that John Richards referenced there. And so you could maybe expect that argument for the next few budgets if it goes the way the Milwaukee program did.
Another big development with the state budget process was the University of Wisconsin system, which Sean and I are both employees of the University of Wisconsin Extension, was going to get a boost in funding in the next state budget, but then something happened, right, Sean?
They were going to get a boost in funding, they were going to get a tuition increase, and then at legislators' request, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau came out with a memo detailing all of the university's financial reserves at campuses throughout the system, several hundred million dollars, $600 million plus. And basically the legislature went ballistic once it went out. Here's a little montage here from a hearing, a contentious hearing on the issue, first with Alberta Darling, Senator Alberta Darling, then Senator Mike Ellis, and then UW President, then President Kevin Riley.
It looks like a scheme. It looks like you intended to put this money all over so that people wouldn't know what you were doing.
There's a degree of arrogance here on the part of the university. They all think they're PhDs and we ought to be working at a Jiffy Lube. Well, that's not the way it works. The legislature's a heck of a lot smarter than they're giving us credit for.
I hear the angst. I hear the anger. I think in many ways, it's justified. I don't think we have done right in the way we've put these numbers out and the way we've explained them.
And so in a year when the state had revenue growth and most areas of the state budget saw an increase in funding, the university really did get cut. That tuition increase that they were going to get to help fund their operations turns into a tuition freeze. And they're going to be scrutinized sort of using these parameters probably for the next several budgets.
And UW System President Kevin Riley decided to step down.
He did decide to step down and leaving for, another job. I think that people in the system value what he did, but the legislature, especially Senator Darling, among others, very frustrated with him.
You know, we have just a minute or so before our news break, and we'll continue after news, but let's talk a little bit about the debate over a tax cut and school funding before then.
Yeah, this was something where you did have sort of, you did see a divide among Republicans, and you had those like Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker. Basically, from the get-go, knowing that they were going to have revenue growth in state government, Voss said he wanted a tax cut.
I want the largest, most robust tax cut we can possibly afford, because it's not about accounting of future years. It should be about the accounting today, which shows our budget is balanced, and more money in the hands of every single taxpayer is good for our economy.
So the governor unveiled his initial budget back in February. Turns out there's essentially no new money for schools. And that had Senator Luther Olson, Republican of Ripon, questioning the decisions there.
I got to believe that folks in this state, rather than getting a $2 a week tax cut, would rather see their schools get something rather than no increase per student whatsoever. It's all priorities.
And just 30 seconds, we got the tax cut.
Yeah, we got the tax cut. A couple things led to that. One, new revenue estimates say, well, the state's probably going to have more money to work with, so we have more money to give to a tax cut. And two, the UW stuff happened, and suddenly the legislature decided we don't need to give them so much money. That was applied to a tax cut as well.
We will continue our year-end look at what happened at the state capitol with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, after we check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is our last state capitol report of 2013. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 7:37 on this Monday, December 30th. Our state government reporter, Sean Johnson, is with us talking about some of the most significant news stories from the state capitol in this past year. And we will also, in just a bit, to preview some of the top issues that will be facing the state legislature and will be in state politics in the coming year. And we're welcoming your questions and we're welcoming your input, too. What do you think was the biggest story in state politics in 2013? What is your hope for state politics in 2014? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Sean, we ended the last half hour talking about the state budget process and what was in the state budget that we're currently living through right now and what wasn't. We talked a little bit about the expansion of school vouchers. We talked about the issues with the UW system and its reserves. And what else was in that state budget?
Big changes to Medicaid. Medicaid has been something through BadgerCare that both Governor Doyle and Governor Thompson before him have sort of steadily expanded. You know, as the state moved away from welfare, the thought was we need to build up this this other safety net around working families, that if they're going to go out and work at low wages at times, we need to have BadgerCare to support them. And so Thompson, Doyle grew BadgerCare consistently. Governor Walker was really faced with the choice here as the Federal Affordable Care Act was set to kick in. He had an option to expand it further using, you know, mostly federal money for several years. They would cover the cost of an additional expansion of BadgerCare. But that would mean basically working hand in hand with the president on this and being a full partner in Obamacare, which is clearly not popular in Republican, among Republican primary voters for sure. So Governor Walker sort of played coy about his decision for a while, then in February announced that he was going to go really a completely different direction and change Wisconsin's Medicaid program in ways that the state hasn't seen since really before Governor Thompson. Here was Governor Walker making his announcement.
I know when I grew up, one of the great strengths was having parents in a community that instilled in me the values of hard work, self-determination, of dedication and commitment. And I think, unfortunately, those are slipping away, not so much because of society as a whole, but because in too many ways the government, at both the federal and the state level, is stepping in and taking those critical choices away from us. Some will portray this as not caring about people. I think it's just the opposite. I care too much about the people of this state not to empower them to control their own destiny.
And so what the governor did is essentially took two groups of people and treated them very differently. for parents and caretakers who earn above the federal poverty level. He shifted them off of Badger Care and essentially said, you're going to have to go find your health insurance on the new federal health exchange, that will be available for you. And that from here on out, Medicaid is going to be something for the very poor. And so if you're under the federal poverty level, even if you're a childless adult, and childless adults have not all been covered in the past, even under Governor Doyle, you are going to have the option for Badger Care, that everybody, if under the federal poverty level, childless adults included, will have the option of Badger Care. So a complete reworking of Badger Care and a complete turning away of considerable federal dollars. And so that was something that Democrats really seized on, that if you look at this from a financial perspective, based on the Legislative Fiscal Bureau memos, ends up costing the state quite a bit and you have fewer people covered. Here's Democrat John Erpenbach of Middleton.
Why are we saying no? The only reason I can think of is this is pure politics. This is a national agenda. It's not a Koch brothers thing. This is a Scott Walker for president agenda.
So the legislature actually, and the governor, revisited that decision just recently in December. They had a special session called by the governor and basically delayed those changes for another 3 months because the federal health insurance exchange is really not up and running as it should be right now. Numbers that the state had showed that very few people had signed up. And so the parents and caretakers who were on Badger Care and within that certain income group will have, and this is about 72,000 people, they'll have a few more months to sign up for the exchange. Those childless adults who were below the federal poverty level, who were thinking they were going to get Badger Care coverage, they have to wait a few months too. And so they're a few months more where they're trying to figure out what's happening.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about Governor Walker testing the presidential waters in just a bit. But a couple of other items from the state budget that was passed this year. We also talked about the tax cut, the income tax cut that passed, mm-hmm. and the debate with school funding. You did mention during news that there was a school funding did get a boost.
Yeah,
as well.
and school funding also got a boost. And mm-hmm. neither I think conservatives weren't exactly happy with the size of the tax cut. School funding advocates were not thrilled with the size of the school funding increase, given the increase in the projected revenues ahead, but those both got a little bit of an increase as the debate finally wrapped itself up.
And we'll talk about tax reform being on the table for 2014 in just a moment or two. But also in that state budget, the state legislature removed the residency requirement from the city of Milwaukee. What was going on there?
This is one of those policy decisions that was stuck into the budget that, you know, maybe years from now it's forgotten, or maybe years from now you look back at this budget and say, wow, that was pivotal. Because there are studies that have shown that in some large cities, when you remove the residency requirement that says if you work here for the city, you got to stay here, that it's been tough in those cities. And so they removed it for the city of Milwaukee. And, the argument that was sort of winning the day toward the end among Republicans who voted to remove it was that this is just a personal liberty issue, that the government shouldn't be able to tell you where you have to live. This is actually an issue that split Republicans. You had really the key opponent to it ended up being Senator Glenn Grothman of West Bend, who said, I really worry about the future of the city of Milwaukee. So that one did squeak through. Also something on the sale of state property, which maybe that ends up being no big deal. The sale of this property has to go through the Joint Finance Committee. But the way that it was written in the budget, and it was left in the budget like this, it's worded very broadly so that the state now has the authority to sell highways, prisons, dormitories, that even the state capitol. And that sounds beyond the pale, but it is worded in such a way that all of those things are possible now as long as the legislature or as long as the governor and the Joint Finance Committee agrees to it. And it was left that wording was left in the budget.
Well, again, we will be looking ahead to the coming year as well. But we do have Greg on Facebook who says that he thinks the story of 2013 was the arrests in the Capitol Rotunda of the protesters. Remind us of that story.
Yeah, I mean, there has been a regular gathering since really the protests began in the thick of the heat, the thick of the fight over the budget repair bill. There's been a regular showing of solidarity sing-along where opponents of Governor Walker gather in the rotunda, sing protest songs about the governor, hold up protest signs, you know, basically keep a presence daily at noon. And this happens every day. They move outside on Fridays, but otherwise they're in there. And at some point this summer, under the direction of a new police chief, the Capitol Police started to, you know, crack down on this and say that because you need a permit in the Capitol under emergency rules that we have passed, and because the State Department of Administration read a court decision as saying you got to have that permit if you're in groups of 20 or larger, Capitol Police started cracking down in a big way. And that involved basically an announcement every day on a bullhorn that says, if you don't leave, you're going to be arrested. So here's a little montage of some of the sounds we heard this summer.
Attention in the Capitol. This is the State Capitol Police Chief David Irwin. I have determined that your group or event does not have the required permit. I am declaring this an unlawful event. Please move your group outside or disperse immediately. If you do not, each participant is subject to arrest.
Is it a deterrent? No, it's like kindling on the fire. They just fanned the flames of my enthusiasm for the first article of the Wisconsin Constitution, which is freedom of speech. And they fanned the flames of a lot of people today.
So whatever happened then? Wasn't there some sort of court settlement on this whole issue of permits?
There was. Well, first there were many days where people would, as the arrest started, more people would come to the Capitol and they would voluntarily get cuffed, taken down to the basement, ticketed, then they'd walk back upstairs and many of them would start singing again, get cuffed again, walk down to the basement. It was pretty bizarre. And there was eventually a court settlement that said you no longer have to have a permit for these gatherings. You essentially have to, if you've got groups of, I think 12 or larger. But if you have a group coming, you know, you have group coming, you just got to give the state a heads up.
Notify, but not get permission.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people are still singing. I tell you, it's a lot quieter there now. It has been recently. And it's a little more normal.
Yeah, but the people who were cited under
this—that's still up. I believe that's still up in the air, yeah. And you know how the state decides to proceed with that, especially with some people who have tickets up in the teens for unlawful assembly. That's an unresolved issue.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about some of the most significant stories of 2013 from the state capitol. And we'll continue with also a look ahead to the priorities of the state legislature and the top issues expected in state politics in 2014. Coming up in just a moment. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. And this is our year-end edition of our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine with Sean Johnson, our state government reporter, reviewing all of the significant news stories of the past year from the state capitol, and taking a look at the year to come as well. And Sean, we had at the end of this year, our Governor Walker, writing a book and going on a national book tour, saying that He didn't do this to run for president.
Yeah, and he was asked about this a lot this year, what he was planning or what the book meant or what all the fundraising out of state meant. I went back and just pulled a cut from him where I think this was right after it was announced that he was going to be writing this book, which is usually seen as a sign you want to do something nationally. He was asked about it. Here's what he had to say back then.
Well, I'm completely satisfied being governor. What I've said in the past is, who knows, my option might be in a few years to be in the private sector. I didn't specifically say one thing or another. I've said I love being governor. I've had to work hard for it. I'm focused on being governor. I'm going to continue to be governor as long as the people of the state want me to be governor. And I don't see any changes in the foreseeable future.
And the governor has not formally announced that he's going to run for re-election, but he is, isn't he?
It sounds like it. It sure sounds like it. He hasn't announced, but when he's been asked about it, he said that, look, I'm not a betting man, but if I were, I wouldn't bet against me running for governor. Seems like they're laying the groundwork for it. There doesn't seem to be a clear-cut candidate who would run in his stead necessarily, although there are options out there for Republicans. But in any case, Scott Walker sounds like he's running for a second term.
Yeah, and jobs will be a big issue. Wisconsin continuing to lag the nation and the Midwest when it comes to job growth.
Yeah, and we have every quarter we have one of these jobs reports that is sort of defined by economists as the gold standard of job measurement. It's essentially a census of nearly all employers and gives you a really good picture of how many jobs there are out there. And every time that's come out, it's shown Wisconsin lagging the nation in its pace of job creations. Here is Governor Walker after that report came out in March, showing Wisconsin lagging its Midwest neighbors and the nation.
It's simple. You know, we had the first year, we had a lot of protests in the state. We had 2 years almost worth of recalls. A lot of employers here, I think, can relate to the fact that uncertainty is one of the biggest challenges for employers, big or small, or anywhere in between. There was a lot of uncertainty. The good news is that's passed.
And here was Democratic Party Chair Mike Tate after that same report in March.
I think instead of Scott Walker traipsing around the country to run for president, he should be here at home, focused on growing jobs and growing the economy. And that's unfortunately, he's focused on a lot of things, but not one of them has done anything to help grow this economy.
And so we've seen this continue. The most recent quarterly report that came out, and that ran through June of last year, which is essentially after the recall period, it showed Wisconsin trailing the Midwest and the nation. I think more troubling for the state of Wisconsin is that Wisconsin was starting to lag its own pace from the previous 2 years in the same reporting period. You know, so that's the previous 2 years, June reports were much better than this year's. And so, you know, that raises a question of whether Wisconsin's economy is sort of flatlining. The state says, well, if you look at these monthly reports that we've had this summer, which are not reflected in these quarterly reports, it's actually been going pretty good. So stay tuned.
Well, certainly the economy and jobs will be an issue in the 2014 election year. How big a deal will these anti-abortion bills that have passed be in next year's elections, you think, Sean?
I mean, it could be a big deal in key Senate seats, especially the seat of Senator Mike Ellis, which is one of the key contested seats up for grabs in the state Senate. Ellis was acting Senate president at the time that they voted on this bill that would require women seeking an abortion to get an ultrasound first, also require abortion doctors to have admitting privileges within a hospital nearby. The vote started after a half hour of debate one morning in the Senate, which is when the majority leader said it would be. Democrats didn't agree to that. They were still talking. And here's what it sounded like.
Calls. You're interrupting a roll call. Sit down. Right now. Call the roll.
Senator Carpenter. Calls. Cullen.
You're interrupting a roll call, and that will not be tolerated. Sit down.
Ooh, I remember that, yeah.
Broke his gavel, I believe, and, you know, joked about it in the next session. And really, yeah, I think Democrats, a lot of them would count Ellis as somebody that they like and respect, but they're going to go after him with that footage and already have, Planned Parenthood has, up in that, up in his media market. And on that issue, they feel like that's something that could potentially get women voters, some independent voters. Ellis is facing Penny Bernard Shaver up in that district. And, you know, Democrats really have to win three Senate seats this go-round to take control of the Senate. It's going to be, you know, uphill climb for them, especially in a non-presidential year. But Ellis is one of the seats that they're targeting.
And the governor, Governor Walker, will face a woman in 2014, presuming he does run again. We have one announced for sure, a candidate for the Democratic nomination and a possible second.
Yeah, it sure looks like it, unless somebody else jumps into the race. But you have Mary Burke, who has announced that she's running for governor. Mary Burke was a Commerce Secretary under Governor Jim Doyle and has been an executive for Trek Bicycle, which her family founded. So she's definitely in. And then maybe in is Kathleen Vinehout, state senator from Alma in western Wisconsin. Kathleen Vinehout has an enthusiastic Democratic base behind her, it looks like. Not sure if that will be reflected in any kind of primary vote totals. She hasn't even made the decision yet whether she's going to get in the race, but looks like there might be a Democratic primary there.
Yeah, and we just have a couple of minutes left. Yeah. Attorney General Van Hollen is not going to seek re-election.
And that was pretty big news last year. Van Hollen won his last election pretty easily. Sure, it certainly would have been favored to do the same thing coming into the next election. He announced he's not running. He's actually said that he might consider a state Supreme Court position mm-hmm. down the road if one were to open up. We do know that Justice Pat Crooks, who hasn't made any decision one way or the other, but I believe his seat's coming up pretty soon. Now, if he stepped down, that would leave an open seat. So, you know, Van Hollen left, and so you've got a few people that are running for his attorney general seat. Waukesha County DA Brad Schimmel for Republicans, State Rep John Richards for Democrats, Dane County DA Ishmael Ozan for Democrats, and maybe Jefferson County DA Susan Happ for Democrats.
Yeah, and very briefly, we don't have Senator Bob Jauch and Senator Tim Cullen, mm-hmm. and who else is not going to run again?
We don't know yet, but yeah. The big question is Senator Dale Schultz going to run again?
Yeah.
And that's going to be an interesting seat to watch. He may, you know, there is the possibility he decides to run as an independent, which would be an interesting race, too.
And in our last 15 seconds, tax reform is on the legislative agenda for this coming year.
They're not going to do anything on it this year, but you can expect the governor to talk this year about the possibility of reducing the state income tax or eliminating it and making up for the money with a sales tax increase. So, I mean, that's going to be a campaign issue, but not something that gets passed.
I got it. Yeah, they're kind of laying the groundwork for possibly the
for the
next
budget.
Yeah.
If he's governor, right.
Thanks very much, Sean. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio State Government Reporter. Thanks to Bill Mertens, Christy Taylor, and to Robin Cherry for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.